This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM 89.9. I'm Chuang, and Chao Ning is with me as well. We are looking at the numbers and the markets. In about 15 minutes, we'll talk to Rachel Gong, a senior research associate at Khazanah Research Institute, on the digital divide. But before that, markets. In America, stocks fell and treasuries gained as investors considered whether the levels of stimulus being provided is enough amid this gradual economic recovery.
So as a result, the Dow was down 0.5%, S&P 500 down 0.8%, and NASDAQ was down 1.3%. As a result, you did see some quite heavy selling in the, with the likes of Facebook. Meanwhile, if we look at Asian markets, Nikkei was down 0.7%, Hang Seng down 1.3%, Shanghai was down 0.4%, Kospi down 1.22%, Singapore Straits Times down 0.2%, and the FBM KICI was down 1.2%. In fact, there wasn't a single major market that was in the green from the looks of it.
Okay, so to break down the whys and wherefores of why financial markets have behaved the way they have, we've gotten on the line with us Carlos Casanova, the chief Asia economist for Coface. Carlos, thanks for talking to us again. Now, what's your read of the Fed's latest policy guidance and how it will impact central bank policy in Asia?
Good morning. So there's been a lot of talk about the Fed and stock markets. I'd like to just highlight first that part of the reason why a lot of these stock indices were so high was also due to valuations of some of the big tech companies, and arguably that was not supportive. But yes, there's been a lot of commentary in the media this week following from that decision to not hike interest rates anytime before the end of 2023. That was Fed language. And this is basically due to the fact that they do expect that it will be a little bit more difficult for the U.S. economy due to the pandemic. So we've said that there's going to be a few things that the Fed's going to look at going forward. Inflation, that 2% level, of course, is one of them. The Fed went further by saying that they expect inflation to remain above 2% for a significant period of time before moving. But they also increased their mandate to include unemployment. No figure was provided, but typically the natural unemployment rate that the Fed likes to quote for the U.S. is 5%. So we do expect that, you know, both conditions would have to be met, which, of course, implies a much longer period of accommodative policies in the United States. Good news for Asia in the sense that the real rate differential with the U.S. will widen or continue to be wide in some cases. However, it really is up to central banks how they use that space in the next few years, because we are also going to see an increase in debt. So some countries will be able to capitalize, whereas others will be just potentially stuck in the management of the crisis and won't use this this additional policy room wisely.
And Carlos, if we look more broadly in Asia, among the countries you cover, right, who is under pressure to cut rates the most? In other words, whose economy is suffering?
So there's two things. There are a few countries. There's a diversification in terms of the growth trajectory. So we see countries that are still grappling with the impact of COVID-19, but have, for a myriad of reasons, not been able to implement adequate policies. They're struggling the most. And this includes India and Indonesia. These are the two countries where we expect to see growth to drop the most in 2020. And then the other hand, the other side of the coin is, of course, countries that still have plenty of room to cut. So we like to look at the real rate differential of the 10-year government bond note, adjusted for the real rate. So it's adjusted for inflation. And then we compare that with the US. And so we do see that there's significant room to cut in places like Malaysia, Indonesia, and also to a lesser extent, the Philippines. So whereas in places like India, for example, that rate differential is very narrow, due to high inflation in that market. So it's unlikely that they will have as much room as places like Indonesia, despite BI's decision this week to leave rates on hold, to cut going forward. And that's going to complicate their recovery trajectory as well going forward.
Yeah, Carlos, there are broad market consensus expectations that we've seen the bottom of the crisis and we are going to be better here on in, including among the OECD, who says that growth won't be as bad as expected. Are you on board with that kind of thinking? Going forward,
I think there has been a trend to revise GDP growth forecasts for developed markets in Europe and North America up. I do expect some upside to be justified. At the beginning of the year, there was a lot of uncertainty. We have become better at navigating the COVID-19 pandemic. So the lockdown measures are not being as dramatic as they were in March. It's more targeted, and we're also getting used to working from home and ordering online and ordering delivery and these kind of things. So the impact on the activity on the economy, even in case of a second wave in the fall, is expected to be more muted than what it was in Q2. So of course, some research houses have revised GDP growth forecasts up. I do, however, feel that there's significant uncertainty in that assessment. And so our current view is still that the global economy will contract and by approximately 4.7% in 2020, which is a slightly more negative number than we had in Q2 due to that downside pressure in some of the big Asian markets that I've mentioned, like India.
And Carlos, let's look at Japan, right? Because the Bank of Japan maintained interest rates yesterday as widely expected. But there is a new Prime Minister, Suga, and he said he'll continue Shinzo Abe's economic policies. Is there anything you're watching out there in terms of what could move the needle? Or do you really think that Abenomics will continue in the form that we are used to?
Mm-hmm. So I do expect that Suganomics will be a continuation of Abenomics.
I like that. It's a new term.
New term. The main reason is because the sort of key disruptor in the Japanese macroeconomic policy picture is Kuroda. And he's also setting the stage for other central banks around the world with his yield curve targeting. Kuroda will continue in his role until the end of 2023. So we do have a significant period of policy continuation. We don't expect to see departures. There are, however, a couple of things that I think Suga will bring into the picture, and they're already starting to be quite visible. The first is there's going to be a focus on employment and a focus on quality of growth, and that is going to be also part of Bank of Japan's mandate, and Bank of Japan said that this week. So, you know, assuming that the inflation target does reach 2%, which is highly unlikely anytime soon, but the bank could still keep conditions very accommodative if unemployment hasn't picked up. So, you know, part of what we've also seen with the Fed to try to increase the mandate of the bank to include more things than just financial stability. And the other area, we're not there yet, but the other thing to watch out, in my opinion, given how inflation is expected to remain low globally, is whether there's going to be more coordination between Bank of Japan and the Ministry of Finance. There's been talk of monetization in Japan, in previous occasions, and it's possible that they'll try to pursue at least some degree of coordination between the two.
And Carlos, let's look at your hometown, Hong Kong, because unemployment came out on Thursday, right? 6.1%. Do you think this is something that we should worry about? And, you know, there are questions whether Carrie Lam is doing enough in terms of stimulus, because there is this war chest of $126 billion. Could it be deployed more effectively?
Yes. So this is the unemployment is a worry, of course, because Hong Kong's economy is very export, very consumption oriented as well. And with travel lockdown measures in place until who knows when, but possibly the end of the year, if not longer, no Chinese tourists are able to come into the city to consume, unlikely that they would, given, you know, the global pandemic situation, and anytime soon either. And so you have this increase in unemployment domestically, which, of course, is going to translate into uncertainty and weaker consumption, which is going to complicate that recovery going forwards. The economy, we've said it before, but it's facing this triple whammy. So tariffs on Chinese exports to the U.S. that get routed via Hong Kong. Now, due to the national security law, we also have tariffs on Hong Kong's exports to the U.S. as well. We also have social protests. They've been going on for 12 months, and that's dragging on consumption. No end in sight. In fact, a few weeks ago, we saw those as well. So until the government sort of addresses the fundamental underlying issues that are fueling social discontent, all the inequality, all of the housing affordability, etc., those will continue to play a role in delaying that recovery for Hong Kong. And last but not least is COVID-19 situation. So it is a delicate time. We do expect to see very weak performance this year and also next year, which would make 3 years of contraction for Hong Kong. But the good news is they do have tools at their disposal to try to use that budget a little bit more wisely, to try to reduce some of the social pressures and to try to support employment, because ultimately that's going to drive the recovery in domestic consumption in 2021.
Okay, Carlos, thanks ever so much for your time. That was Carlos Casanova, Chief Asia Economist at COFAS, intriguingly saying that he's a bit of a contrarian point of view in terms of broad expectations that developed economies will do better this year than expected. He reckons that she's going to be much bumpier. Not much bumpier, but bumpier than people expect.
And the other thing, you heard it first on BFM.
Suganomics.
Suganomics. A new term that we that Carlos has coined. And I think we're going to be using that quite a bit.
Which the new Prime Minister in Japan is pouring all over his economy.
Yes.
And no reference intended to the Def Leppard song. Okay, it is 16 minutes past 7. We'll come back after this with more news. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.